There are quite a few questions on the whole disrobing incident. I'll address them after some time, either in this session or the next session. But let me continue with the Dhritarashtra character analysis, wherein I focused on how there is the free will that is required, where the internal intention is needed for change. Dhritarashtra changed for a few moments, but again he relapsed. And this went on throughout. Even when the Pandavas of petitioned peace, at that time, Dhritarashtra, when Krishna came as a peace messenger, Krishna told Dhritarashtra that actually, I have no desire to fight with the Pandavas. But Duryodhana doesn't listen to me. If you can persuade him, then I accept your proposal. So he was the king, but he openly admitted that he just didn't have the power. And then Krishna tried to persuade Duryodhana, but Duryodhana was completely obstinate. I'll talk about that rejection later. But eventually, after all the Kauravas were killed, then finally Vidura came to him. That was the time when Dhritarashtra could accept Vidura's instructions. Now Vidura came and spoke very strongly with Dhritarashtra. He said, Bhima power pindam, that you know, the food that Bhima is throwing out from his plate, you are eating that. You are like a dog in the house of the Pandavas. You try to dishonor their wife, you try to kill them, and now you are living on them. Don't you have any sense of self-respect? Now, this is a metaphorical usage. Yudhishthira offered him a lot of respect. It was not that he was getting food literally out of Bhima's plate. But the kingdom was the Pandavas. And Bhima was the commander of the Pandava army. Yudhishthira was the king and Bhima was second in charge. So that was a time when Dhritarashtra got jolted. And then he left with Vidura. So Vidura had been instructing Dhritarashtra for so long. What was it that made the instruction work at this particular point? It was because at this point his attachment had become permanently frustrated. His attachment was to Duryodhana. And he had hoped that Duryodhana would one day become the king. But when Duryodhana was being killed, all his sons had been killed, at that time he no longer had any hope left. So then that was the time when his knowledge, when the word Vidura spoke, entered into him. Even then it took time. Vidura had to speak strongly. So that means that Dhritarashtra had to lose everything before he lost his attachment. He had to lose everything before he lost his attachment. So now, it is ultimately, we all will lose everything at the time of death. But losing everything at the time of death is not considered renunciation. It is not considered anyway conducive for spiritual growth. Because that is involuntary. It's taken away from us by a higher force. Transformation requires a change from within. Ultimately, Krishna is present in our own hearts. But even Krishna cannot take us back to the kingdom of God unless we want to go back. So, Krishna is in our hearts, but even Krishna can't transform our hearts unless we want the heart to be transformed. So, there are some questions about consciousness and the soul, which I'll try to address here. Now, what exactly is the soul, what is consciousness, and how is all this related with attachments? So, imagine a room is completely dark, and in that we have a torchlight. Normally, In some lights, if for example a tube, it is more or less omnidirectional. Light goes in all directions. All that goes more downwards, goes in all directions. Torches usually are unidirectional. The way we point, that's where you will see. So if it's pitch dark, we point the torch in a particular direction, that's where we'll be illuminated. Other will be slightly illuminated. But maybe around us it will still be dark. And behind us will be completely dark. So the torch light is like the soul. The flashlight is like the soul. And the beam of the flashlight is like consciousness. So our desire, our intention, our attachment, they determine where the beam will go. In which direction the beam will go will be determined by basically our desires. So when we are attached to something, it's like the flashlight is pointed in a particular way, we see that thing and we don't see any other things. So when a person is attached, at that time their vision fixates on the object of the attachment. And that's all is seen by them. When I talked earlier about how when somebody is attached, the knowledge is like lightning. Not light. That means lightning means temporary illumination is there. So like that, we see this is what I want, this is what I go for. Other things we temporarily may see at the background of our awareness, but other things don't count much. The object which we are attached to, that is what counts. So in the case of Dhritarashtra, because he was so attached to Duryodhana, that Duryodhana and Duryodhana's pleasure was all that mattered to him. So that was filling his screen completely. And even after Duryodhana died, still the lamentation over the death of Duryodhana filled his screen. And he was always morose. In fact, he tried to even kill Bhima. Now, after the Pandavas won the Kurukshetra war, they came to meet Dhritarashtra. And they came to meet Dhritarashtra. At that time, Dhritarashtra, feigning affection for them, he said, "Oh, where are all you Pandavas? I want to embrace you." And then, where is Bhima? And Bhima came forward and Krishna said, "Wait." And Krishna, by his mystic powers, summoned an effigy, a statue of Bhima, on which Duryodhana would practice. So Duryodhana's dream was to pound Bhima to death. So he had so much hatred towards Bhima that he had actually made an effigy of Bhima and would beat it with mace. So Bhima was his like mace practice target. And Krishna summoned that effigy, and that effigy came in front of Dhritarashtra. And Dhritarashtra came forward and hugged him. Bhima, but he crushed him with such power that an effigy crumbled to powder. Crumbled him. Now Dhritarashtra, although he was blind, he was still Kshatriya and he had power in his body. But as Bhima crumbled down to powder, then Bhima effigy crumbled down to powder, at that time, immediately, Dhritarashtra said, "Oh alas, what have I done in my anger?" He had to save face. He thought he'd kill Bhima. And now he said, "Alas, what have I done in my anger?" And then Krishna said, "Oh king, do not be angry. Bhima is safe over here." And that was just an effigy of Bhima. Dhritarashtra was mortified, both at his failure as well as the exposure of what he had been trying to do. So now here, what we see is, even after the death, he thought, "Okay, my son couldn't become the king. Let me take revenge at least by killing the slayer of my son." He just didn't think that my son had done terrible things because of which he died. He said, "No, you were the killer of my son. I have to kill you." So even after that, his inner screen still remained filled with Duryodhana. "Oh, why did he have to die? Why did he have to die?" He remained morose. However, when Vidura came, at that time, he positive in the Pandavas. Now you are living like a parasite on them itself. And you're wasting your life. So the nature of attachment is that till we get the attachment, we crave. When we like it, when we like it, when we like it. When we have it, we worry. But man, I may lose it, I may lose it, I may lose it. And after we lose it, we love it. Oh, I lost it, I lost it, I lost it. Yasyam vaishruyamanayam krishne paramapurushe bhaktir utpaddate pumsam shokamoha bhayapaha. So, shokamoha bhaya. So, these three are the phases of our relationship with attachment to worldly things. When we lose it, there is lamentation. When we have it, there is fear. I will lose it. And till we have it, we think, oh, this is the only source of happiness. When will I get it and when will I become happy? So this is how an attachment consumes us. So, when an alcoholic is not drinking, alcohol is thinking, when will I drink? When will I get the drink? When will I get the drink? When will I get the drink? Just can't think of anything else. When they get the drink, oh, this drink is so good, but I want one more, one more, one more. And after they are drunk, what a fool, why did I drink so much? And beating themselves up, and after some time, okay, I will drink one more. When will I get the drink again? So, basically, the attachment consumes us mentally and it doesn't allow us to think of anything else. This was the plight of Dhritarashtra. But just like earlier I said that when we are attached to something, then we become desensitized to everything else. So earlier he was desensitized because of his attachment to Duryodhana and he committed many atrocities. Now he was living in a humiliating condition. He was old, he was dependent on the people whom he had tried to slay. And when Vidura came and spoke strong words, that jolted him. What am I doing? I don't want to live like this. I don't want to live like this. And then that renunciation came to him. Now this time also, the spiritual awareness could have been temporary. But this time it lasted because the attachment was permanently frustrated. Because there was no chance ever of getting Duryodhana back and getting the object of the craving fulfilled. So that time he was able to just give it up. So with respect to us, Dhritarashtra represents this, we could call it as irrational attachment. Even when the object of attachment itself is the object of attachment, Duryodhana, and Duryodhana himself never really offered much respect to Dhritarashtra. But still he was attached. Generally, when we become very attached to someone, the result is that that person gains control over us. And generally, if somebody gets control over someone else, it's very difficult to respect someone whom you control. If A and B are two people and A is attached to B and therefore B gets control over A because A just can't tolerate the displeasure of B. So then B will start using A for whatever they want. And because we know that this person is attached to me, they'll do whatever I tell them. What, if I just press the right buttons, they'll do what I want. So actually, Duryodhana, for the sake of external form, referred to Duryodhana as Dhritarashtra as his father. But he manipulated Dhritarashtra. And he allowed himself to be manipulated. Finally, the attachment broke by Vidura's strong words. So going back to the earlier point of what are the five factors that determine our behavior, does anyone remember I mentioned that? The five factors: past life karma, childhood, neighborhood, yes, free will and Krishnaness. Thank you. So now, in this case, whatever is past life karma, he was born as a Kshatriya, he was born as a blind person, he had a particular nature. That is fine. Now, in his upbringing, Dhritarashtra, he always grew up feeling that I was wrong. And then, as long as his association, Duryodhana was there. Duryodhana kept pressing his buttons. And Duryodhana kept manipulating him, pushing him in the wrong direction. Now, Vidura tried to show him the right direction, but that just couldn't register with him. So, all of us have a lower side and a higher side. But which side will dominate, that depends on, to some extent, on which side is stronger. And which side is stronger often depends on which kind of association has a stronger influence on us. If we have a devotee association and a materialistic association, the devotees will tell us, oh, come to a temple, come to a spiritual program. Materialistic people will say, let's go to this party, let's go there, let's do that. Now both will pull us in different directions. Now whichever has a stronger influence on us, that's what will affect us. So for Dhritarashtra, as long as Duryodhana was there, he just couldn't do anything to displease Vidura. So Vidura, it was not that Vidura's spiritual potency was any less. Vidura's words were always filled with wisdom. But as long as Duryodhana was there, that association effect influenced Dhritarashtra much more. But when Duryodhana was no longer there, then when Vidura came back in, his association, in his presence, and spoke those strong words, and that jolted him out of his temper. That jolted him out of the spell of lamentation which he was living, and then he started examining his own situation. One of the tendencies of the mind is that it makes us feel sorry for ourselves. Everybody has things which have gone wrong in their life. And when we start feeling sorry for ourselves, oh, you know, this terrible thing happened to me, that terrible thing happened to me, that terrible thing happened to me, then at that time we become blinded to the actual reality of our situation. Because we are thinking, you know, this went wrong, that went wrong, that went wrong. And in the process we may be doing further wrong things. So his pitiable situation in which he was in, it was Vidura's word that cut through his illusion. And that's how, finally, whatever his mind had created a picture of himself, he realized that my life is on a wrong track. I have to correct myself. And that's when he corrected himself and he was elevated. Finally, he went with Vidura to the forest and he attained eventually elevation, got disentangled from his worldly attachments. So Dhritarashtra, he who was very strongly attached to a kingdom, gave up the attachment by not just the power of a higher association, but the elimination of the lower association. So as long as lower association was there, the higher association could not influence him, because he was just too attached to the lower association. Now this kind of renunciation which comes out of, we could say, frustration, that is good, although that is not the best. See, there are four different things. There is devotion, there is renunciation, there is devotion, there is one extreme is devotion, and the other extreme you could say is frustration. Oh, I'm wanting it, I'm just not getting it. So devotion is, I want the Lord and I seek the Lord. So we can go through various phases in what is appearing on our inner screen. In our inner screen, there may be at the other extreme, one extreme might be, say, infatuation. Wherein we are infatuated. Only if I get this, I'll be happy. We are attached, wildly attached to it. When we don't get it, there is frustration. Now frustration in itself is very different from renunciation. The difference between frustration and renunciation is, frustration is, I want it, but I can't get it. Renunciation is, I don't want it. In frustration, we believe that the thing out there is enjoyable, but somehow I'm not able to get it. In renunciation, we understand that, okay, this is not worth achieving, worth craving for. Then beyond renunciation is, we could say, dedication. Dedication means we commit ourselves to the path of bhakti. And then comes devotion. Devotion is attraction to Krishna, absorption in Krishna. So, all of us, we are at various stages. Infatuation at one extreme, from infatuation to frustration. You want something, I don't get it. Want it, I don't get it. So I was once in Pune and one boy came and told me that I want to become a brahmachari. Now he was hardly ever coming to the temple and occasionally he would come for programs. If somebody wants to dedicate their life to Krishna, they need a serious level of commitment. So then I asked him, okay, what inspired me? He says, actually, you know, I'm thinking of becoming a brahmachari. I will decide by Sunday. What is going to happen on Sunday? He said, I have proposed to my girlfriend. If she says no, I'll become a brahmachari. Now, this frustration in some worldly relationship is not the qualification for renunciation. Renunciation is based on some higher understanding of life's higher purpose. So people may often just go through these phases while they attracted something and just averse to something. Prabhupada calls this bhoga and tyaga. I want it, I don't want it. So this is both in material consciousness. Infatuation and frustration. So now from infatuation, a frustration can be a beginning point for somebody to come towards Krishna. But then one has to rise upwards. Renunciation means one feels, okay, this is not really worth craving for. And then they start looking for something higher in life. And when you start looking for something higher, that requires dedication. It's not that the higher taste is going to come immediately. One needs to commit oneself to the practice of bhakti. And then there is devotion, there is attraction towards the Lord. So for us, on our inner screen, various objects will keep coming and going. And right now, with respect to these objects, we may be either in the stage of infatuation or frustration, or we may be going towards renunciation. Now, the most important thing is this: what objects keep coming and going, they are variable. Some objects may be very attached to, some objects may be a little attached to. The key thing is not whether we are detached from a particular object or not. The important thing is whether we are connected with Krishna. So this dedication refers to the process of sadhana bhakti. We dedicate ourselves to the practice of sadhana bhakti, and by the dedication, gradually the devotion will come. So Dhritarashtra, he was a ritualistic, he used to do his sacrificial fire, he used to maintain. That was just more as a ritual, that as a kshatriya who was living in a pious culture, he had to do that. But he had no conception of any sadhana bhakti. He had no dedication like that. But it's only when Vidura came, and from his frustration throughout his life, as long as Duryodhana was alive, there was infatuation. After Duryodhana departed, there was frustration. But when Vidura came, that is the time when he came to renunciation. And from renunciation, he rose towards, he renounced the world and dedicated himself to spiritual practice. And that's how he ultimately attained elevation. So Dhritarashtra was eventually able to do the right thing because finally his object of attachment had left him. So for us, if we are finding that, say, if we want to give up something and not able to give it up, then we have to see what is it that is giving strength to this attachment. All of us have certain attachments, and those attachments are attacked by something and they are strengthened by something. So that means if there is a particular association, a particular situation, a particular stimulation that strengthens the detachment, that is what, if we can weaken it, then gradually we will start increasing our capacity to resist it. It's just like a war is going on. Sometimes two soldiers are fighting each other. say two soldiers are fighting, now both of them are evenly matched. So one soldier is stronger than the other soldier. This soldier is getting the better of the other soldier. This soldier wants to win. One way is simply that this soldier has to become stronger than the other soldier. The other is a secondary strategy. Sometimes this war is too tough to win. In war, many times battles are lost if the soldiers' food, if the army's food supply is cut off. If two armies are fighting from each other, and if one army's food supply gets cut off, no matter how determined they may be, soldiers can't fight if they don't have any food. So sometimes, if we are too caught with, say, giving up something, you know, I want to give up this. And even when we are practicing bhakti, we are thinking, you know, why can't I give this up? Why is the situation there in my life? Why is the attachment there in my life? Then we are not conscious of Krishna, we are conscious of the attachment. And at that time, what happens is, even when we are practicing bhakti, we are not remembering Krishna. It is the remembrance of Krishna that strengthens us. So what is that happening? We are fighting with the attachment, we are being beaten in that, defeated by the attachment. But at the same time, in the background, our connection with Krishna, which is our strength, we are not actually connected with Krishna also. So we will be beating ourselves up, you know, why can't I give this up, why can't I give this up, but still we will keep relapsing. Because we are not strengthening ourselves, we are weakening ourselves. On the other hand, if you are facing an attachment, you are not able to give it up, we find out what are the sources of strength of this attachment. What is it in my life that is nourishing this attachment? And if that we cut down, then giving up the attachment becomes much easier. I was with one devotee, he was telling that he was practicing bhakti for a long time, but he was not able to give up meat eating. And that was stopping him from growing in his bhakti. So then he finally asked his spiritual master, he says, I'm trying to give it up, but I'm not able to give up. So his spiritual master told him, look at your association. See if you can change your association so that you, when you take food, you don't take food with people who are eating it. Now that requires some lifestyle adjustment. But when he did that, he found some reasons, made some strategies. When he stopped taking food with people who were meat eaters, started taking food with vegetarians, that just became so easy for him. So it was not that the taste of meat was so strong that it was attracting him. It was more the social pressure of being a vegetarian, of eating meat to belong to a particular group, that was pressurizing. The culture is very peculiar. In the Western world, being vegan is considered cool. And if you tell them a vegan, okay, good, we will arrange food for you. In India, being vegetarian is considered old fashioned. Come on, be modern, eat meat. And actually, in the West, eating meat is old fashioned. It's almost like that. Of course, many people still eat meat, but being vegan is considered to be quite modern and quite contemporary. So, when the social pressure is there, at that time, rather than fighting the attachment head on, if you just look at what is the source, what is it that is nourishing this attachment, and we remove that nourishment for that attachment, then overcoming it becomes much easier. So, for Dhritarashtra, his attachment to Duryodhana was there, but the nourishment for that attachment was Duryodhana's presence itself. Once Duryodhana's presence was lost, when Vidura came back again, he was able to give it up. So that change which each one of us has to do, it can be stimulated by certain externals. The change has to be done internally, but sometimes the externals may have so much influence on us that the internal can't be sustained because of certain externals. And some externals may help us to sustain the internal. So rather than facing our attachment head on, we can look at what is nourishing the attachment and weaken that. And by that also we find it is much, much more effective in fighting our attachments. So I'll summarize here and then we can have some questions. I talked about how Dhritarashtra, he was attached lifelong and even after death he was suffering because he stayed attached to his son and his lamenting. So when we are attached, before attachment, there is illusion. When will I get it? When will I enjoy it? When we have it, there is fear and lose it. After losing it, there is lamentation. So basically the inner screen stays filled all the time. because of the attachment. And Vidura came, he was able to give up because his hope of Duryodhana succeeding had been permanently frustrated. So we cannot change our past in terms of our past life impressions. We can't change our past in terms of our upbringing. But we can change it in terms of our association. So when circumstances forcibly change the Dhritarashtra's association, removing Duryodhana and bringing Vidura again, that's when he was able to change his heart. And he devoted himself to the Lord. And I talked about these five things. Do you remember the five things in the spectrum? What is the one extreme? Infatuation. And?
Frustration.
Yes, infatuation and frustration are both are the same material level of consciousness. We go from one to another, second to first again. But when you want to start rising higher, then what is the first?
Yes.
Yes. Renunciation means, I'm not interested in this anymore. There must be something better in my life. And then we start pursuing that something better. What is that?
Dedication
means, just in previous class I explained that, dedication means the actions come before the feelings. That means I keep pursuing a higher spiritual path no matter how I feel. And then finally the result will be
devotion.
When you become attracted to the Lord and become absorbed in Him. So when an attachment is finding it difficult to overcome the attachment, we can see what are the sources of nourishment of that attachment. And you can try to weaken that. And we can check our own source of nourishment and we can strengthen that. So if somebody wants to give up meat, just avoid the association of meat eaters, then giving up meat will become much easier. And if we want to battle, if we focus on getting in our association the stimuli that strengthen us and removing from our association as possible the stimuli that weaken our resolve or that strengthen our attachment, then surely we will eventually emerge victorious in whatever inner battle we may have. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So I know there are a lot of questions. I will take a few questions which I have been asked earlier and then we can move forwards. So the Duryodhana's question, the Draupadi's assembly question, can we keep it till tomorrow morning? Because at that time I will talk about Duryodhana, his psychology, and then I talk about everything about them. Why did Bhishma remain silent? Why did Krishna gamble for so much? All those I'll discuss later at that time, tomorrow. So, any questions any of you have? There are a lot of questions in the first session also. Yes, please.
I have a question from the first session.
Yeah.
You mentioned that Shakti Bhavana,
Ishvara Bhava. Ishvara Bhav is the order more of goodness and Kshatriyas and passion. Ishvara Bhav, actually the word is a little ambiguous, can sound a little confusing. Ishvara Bhav does not mean Bhava for Ishvara. It means Bhava of Ishvara. Bhava for Ishvara means emotion for the Lord, attraction for the Lord. That is not what Ishvara Bhav means. Ishvara Bhav means the mood of Ishwar. That means I am the controller. The controlling mentality is a characteristic of Kshatriyas. Now, as I said, in life, in society, in the world, somebody has to be the leader. So now the leadership is a characteristic of certain people. Now, how they use that leadership, that is up to them. Yudhishthir had leadership qualities, Duryodhana had leadership qualities. So both of them, in one side, had a sense for Duryodhana to maintain the faithful following of his 99 brothers throughout his life. It required that he must have had some leadership skills. But he used those leadership skills for a wrong purpose. So in that sense, the qualities themselves are value neutral. Just like, say, singing ability. That's a value neutral quality. Somebody may sing spiritual songs, somebody may sing sensual songs. Speaking ability. So similarly, leading ability. That is a value neutral quality. It can be used for positive purpose, it can be used for negative purpose. So that's the quality of Libra. So that's why, now controlling, trying to get things done in the world, that is largely characteristic of the mode of passion. In the mode of passion, we focus on controlling the world and making things happen according to our plan in the world. And that corresponds to the Kshatriya mentality. Any other questions? Yes, please. That's true. So is it that Dhritarashtra's was a false enlightenment because it is just because his object of attachment was not there that he chose something higher? It could be, as I said, if it is frustration, then that means the desire is there but the capacity for fulfillment is not there. So he had been at a level of frustration for a good amount of time. But then Vidura's words, what led him to renunciation. And then along with Vidura, when he went to the forest and started practicing mystic yoga, he started practicing sadhana, that is when he exhibited dedication. So yes, it could be that when we lose some object of attachment, that might not be real renunciation. Prabhupada talks about what is called as smashana vairagya. Smashana vairagya means when somebody near to us passes away. At that time, it is called crematorium renunciation. So as long as we go to the crematorium, we feel like, oh, life is terrible, life is temporary, I should pursue something higher in my life. But after a few days, we come back, and then life goes on like normal. So that is because it is mostly circumstantially used. But if the circumstantial, so basically, there is transcendental bhakti, there is circumstantial bhakti. And in between, there is intentional bhakti. Circumstantial bhakti means, oh, this problem has come, I need some relief, let me chant Hare Krishna, let me practice bhakti. It's good if, so even from circumstance, one starts practicing. Like Krishna says, there's four categories of people who come to him. So among them, the distressed and the wealth seekers, as well as the inquisitive, they're all circumstantial devotees. Oh, what are these people in this Bhagavad Gita business? Let me find out. It's all circumstantial. But for them to come to the level of transcendental where they are just devoted to Krishna alone, that may take many lifetimes. Bahunam jinmanamante jnanivan mam prapaddhati vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. So that journey from the circumstantial to the transcendental, that happens through the intentional. So right now, we may have come because of various circumstances and we may start practicing bhakti. And our bhakti is not transcendental, but to a large extent our bhakti is intentional. Intentional means driven by intention. Yes, I want to rise to transcendental level. I want to love Krishna. So circumstance can be a starting point, but the sustain will have to go to the level of intentional bhakti. Okay? Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Okay. So the Bhagavad Gita says that once we get the higher taste, the lower taste will go away. So Dhritarashtra had the higher association, but still the lower association worked on him. Why is that? Yes, it depends on, okay, what is one's intention or how strongly one is attached to something. Let's consider two different examples in even the Bhagavatam. One is of Dhruva, where he started worshipping Vishnu with a material motive. I want a kingdom bigger than my father's. And it is also in the 11th canto the example of Pururava, who worshipped Vishnu, performed elaborate yajna for getting Urvashi. Now both of them were successful in their practices, by which Vishnu appeared before them. Now when Vishnu appeared before Dhruva, Dhruva said, why did I want such a kingdom that is like a broken piece of glass? You, O Lord, are like a jewel. So, kacham vichinvanam idivyaratnam swami krithartasthu varam nayache. I am satisfied with Lord, I don't want it. Now, in contrast, when Pururava saw Vishnu, he said, I want to worship. Give me the assistance, give me worship. And Vishnu said, Tathastu. Vishnu gave him worship. So was it that Vishnu was more attractive when he came in front of Dhruva and Vishnu was not that attractive when he came in front of Purava? No, Vishnu is internally attractive. But at that time, his desire was so strong that Vishnu's attractiveness, the sweetness of devotion to Vishnu, didn't register in his consciousness. So that means that most people live driven by their lower tastes. The world offers so many options in the lower taste and people keep chasing after that. Now, when we get an experience of the higher taste, at that time, we have to compare. Do I want to pursue this or do I want to pursue this? If we are too driven by hopes that, oh, I will get pleasure in this, then you think, okay, I'm not about enjoyment now, but let me make some adjustment and get some enjoyment. And then, although the lower taste has been found, we have realized, okay, this is better, this is not so great. But we think that in future this will become great. And that's how we keep pursuing sense pleasure. So in this case, it was that because his desire for worldly pleasure was so strong, that the higher taste, the higher system just didn't register with him. So ultimately, just because something is higher doesn't mean it will be experienced as higher by us. It is our desire that determines how we experience things. So we will just neglect, okay, this is good, but this is what I want in my life. It's only when, so in some cases, it may be that we get the higher taste and we give the lower taste. In other cases, we get the higher taste but still we keep pursuing the lower taste. And eventually when the lower taste is frustrated, then we move towards the higher taste. So it will depend on the attachment, strength of the attachment. Okay. Yes,
please.
Okay. Good question. So I said that the progressive stages go from renunciation through dedication to devotion. But the scripture also says that devotion itself gives us knowledge and renunciation. Yes, that is true. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayanti Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cheta Hetukam. That when we practice bhakti, then knowledge and renunciation will emerge. Now we have to look at two different things in this. In what context does the Bhagavatam say this? This is 1.2.7 in the Bhagavatam. And in this particular section, the previous verses, the famous verse, Savai Pumsam Paro Dharmo, Yato Bhakti Vodokshaje, Ahitukya Bhaktiyata, Yatma Supasyati. There, the Bhagavatam is saying that bhakti is a paradharma. And there's nothing else that matters. If we have devotion, that is all that matters. And then it is saying, what about other things? Jnana Vairagya, that will come from bhakti. What about Varnashram Dharma? Actually, that is meant to culminate in bhakti. What about Dharmantha Kama Moksha? That is of no use unless you pursue bhakti. So that's what the next 1.8, 2.8, 9, 10 talk about. So here in a philosophical context, the supremacy of bhakti is being talked about. Now in a practical applicational context, we see that even a great devotee like Yudhishthira Maharaj, he was always a great devotee. But towards the end of his life, he renounced the world. Parikshit Maharaj, he was a devoted king. But when the curse came upon him, at that time, he renounced the kingdom and focused entirely on devotion, on the cultivation of devotion. So he did not think that, okay, by my devotion automatic renunciation will come. He focused on renunciation so that he could deepen his devotion. As a king also he was devoted, but as a king he had so many other royal responsibilities. So when he actually renounced the kingdom, then he could full time focus on devotion. So the idea is that a devotee does not have to practice anything else separately for growing spiritually. That's the principle. Bhakti yoga is potent enough that a devotee does not have to practice Jnana yoga or Ashtanga yoga or Devata upasana or anything else like that. Bhakti will give everything. So that is in philosophy. In practice, a devotee has to be observant enough to see how best can I practice bhakti. So in some situations, for some people, being situated in a more renounced position may help them to practice bhakti better. For some people, cultivating a more philosophical understanding of the principles of bhakti may help them to practice bhakti better. So when a devotee adopts renunciation, it is not that the devotee is doing something outside the scope of bhakti. A devotee is not cultivating another path. A devotee is doing that which will help one to practice bhakti more. So, when I was talking about, as we may be practicing devotees, and we are practicing sadhana bhakti, when I talk about sadhana bhakti as a practice and devotion as a state, devotion means pure attraction towards Krishna, which we all of us are far away from it. We are following the process of sadhana bhakti by which we will come to that stage. So, while going towards that stage, how will we go? In that, with respect to different objects, we may have different orientations right now. Some objects you may already renounced. Some of us might have been eating meat earlier, but now we've given it up. Not even feel attracted to it. So the renunciation is there. With respect to some objects, still some infatuation is there. With respect to some objects, some frustration might be there. The key thing is that we try to maintain dedication in the practice of sadhana. And by the dedication in practice of sadhana bhakti, everything else will follow. So as we stay dedicated to practice of sadhana bhakti, we'll get the higher taste, and by the higher taste, the lower taste will go away. So it's not that a devotee tries to separately seek renunciation. A devotee focuses primarily on the cultivation of devotion. And if renunciation is useful, a devotee cultivates renunciation also. And by the practice of dedicated sadhana bhakti, a devotee will come to the stage of renunciation gradually. Is it confusing or is it clear what I am saying?
So, when someone gets frustrated, and then he comes to the point that in the case of trust, he doesn't give up, and then he is dedicated. And then he is dedicated. So, like, if you think of someone who starts Krishna consciousness, then quite often it also happens that we need some kind of knowledge to, renunciate, like you said, those regular principles. We don't give up those regular principles before.
That's fine. So, when I talk about these five stages, are all of them progressive? Do we go through all of them linearly? Is it that renunciation has to come before dedication? Not exactly. It depends on various things. So, for example, somebody is so attached to, say, worldly things that 24 hours they want to stay in worldly association. Then, if at least there are a couple of hours in a week they are coming for a program, they are having that much renunciation. Without that, they couldn't have dedication. If somebody is chanting Hare Krishna regularly, that means they have that much renunciation. Otherwise, they would not want to chant Hare Krishna. So, renunciation is not necessarily digital. You have renunciation, you don't have renunciation. Renunciation can also be analog in degrees. So, just to practice sadhana bhakti also requires some renunciation. Otherwise, without a renunciation, dedication is not possible. And also say, by dedication, renunciation will come. Once you start practicing sadhana bhakti, we start getting some taste. Hey, this is good. It's transforming me. I'll put more time in this. So it's not a this or this process. It's a this and that process. Any other questions? Yes, please. So when animals exhibit some intelligent behavior, so scientists call it instinct, but Prabhupada says that it is actually super soul guiding. Yes, both are true. See, Prabhupada is pointing us to the spiritual understanding of things. But ultimately, what to speak of instinct, any kind of intelligence that we have, it all comes from Krishna. So, scientists, science is a particular branch of knowledge which focuses on acquiring knowledge in a particular way. We often use science as a generic way to refer to many things as science. But science, as it is practiced in the mainstream scientific research, is what is called as that science looks for natural explanations for natural phenomena. That means science looks at the world around us and it tries to explain the world in terms of the world. So the famous incident which is said to have started the scientific revolution is when Newton saw the fruit falling. Some people say it fell in front of him, some people say it fell on him. Now where of it? Now Newton himself believed in God. But when he asked the question, what made the fruit fall? He was not looking for the answer, God made the fruit. Yes, God is the ultimate cause of everything. But he wanted to know what is the material mechanism that made the fruit fall. And then he came up with the principle of gravity. So there can be explanations at multiple levels. Now science operates on a principle which is called methodological naturalism. That methodological naturalism is, as a methodology, as a way of practice, it focuses on naturalism. That means natural here refers to material. It looks for material explanations for material phenomena. And now, whether something non-material exists or not, science doesn't investigate that. Because the approach of science is, once we bring something non-material in, we can't investigate it, we can't analyze it, we can't replicate it, we can't control it. So they say that bringing the non-material into science stops the progress of science. The example that is given in science is that, say, in the medieval ages, there was a black plague. It's a terrible disease that killed almost one third of Europe. When the black plague was there, some people believed, oh, the black plague is caused by some evil spirits. Some ghosts haunt people and they cause this terrible disease to people. But scientists say that if science had believed that, then they would not have to try to find out what is the germ that caused it. So science looked for a material cause for that. And then, by focusing on the material cause, they are able to find a material solution for it, a material treatment for it. So scientists consider that if we bring the non-material into science, then the progress of science will be checked. That's why science, as a matter of methodology, focuses on looking for natural explanations for natural phenomena. Now, some scientists, not all, some scientists extrapolate from this and say that nothing non-natural exists. As a methodology, science will look for material explanation of material phenomena. But beyond methodological naturalism, some scientists go to metaphysical naturalism. That means say nothing beyond nature exists. Now this is not provable by science. All that science can say is we are looking for material mechanisms to explain this. But is there anything beyond that that science can't say? So Prabhupada is pointing us to something beyond that. So now the material mechanism and the non-material agency, they both can exist in parallel. How? Suppose we consider a billiards board, and then one ball hits another ball and a whole set of balls moves and a particular ball goes into the hoop. Now this whole motion of all these balls can be explained in terms of the laws of physics. This ball hit this ball with this force from this angle, with this momentum, and that's why this ball moved. It's a complicated description, but you can describe in terms of the laws of physics why this ball went into the hole. Now, if we were looking at the table, that would be the explanation. But if we moved our view further, we would see outside the table, there is an expert player. And that player hit the ball with a stick. So what caused the ball to go into the hole? Was it the laws of physics or was it the expertise of the player? What was it? Both. Both, isn't it? The expertise of the player is also true. Now the player himself or herself may not be specifically aware of the laws of physics. But the player uses that. So the laws of physics is also one level of explanation. The laws of physics are not a complete explanation, but they are an explanation. We don't have to reject laws of physics as an explanation. Say there is a India-Pakistan cricket match and the last ball is there and Indian batsman is batting. India gets 6 to win and the ball is short pitch, the ball batsman hits the ball and goes over the boundary and India wins. And how did you hit that six? By the law of physics. Well, the law of physics only describes the trajectory of the ball after the bat and the ball came in contact. But the law of physics does not explain why the ball existed in the first place, why the bat existed in the first place, why the ball and bat came in touch with each other, why the ground existed, why the player existed, why the spectators existed. So the laws of physics are not a complete explanation. Laws of physics, they simply describe the correlation between causes and effects. If this cause is there, this effect will come. So that's all laws describe. Laws don't describe why the causes exist or even why the correlation that way between cause and effect exists. All it describes is if this cause comes, this effect will come. And then when we say that, we can explain why the ball went into the hole or why the ball went over the boundary. All that it means is, we can say this cause led to that cause, led to that effect. So science offers an explanation within a particular domain. Some scientists extrapolate it to say that this is itself the complete explanation and nothing more is required. And Prabhupada is very strong in saying that this is not correct. And this idea that science has all the answers to all the questions that can be asked, this is not science. This is not a claim of science. It is actually an ideology which is called scientism. Scientism is the idea that science has the answer to all questions. That science has the answer to all questions. This is not a scientific claim. Because science can't prove that. Is there a scientific proof that science has the answer to all questions? No, we cannot have mathematical proof for that. That is a claim. It is based on an ideology. So that means, see, science is simply a tool for acquiring knowledge. And within its method of acquiring knowledge, science will use certain terms. So we are not against those terms. What is the problem is, if those terms and that explanation is considered to be the final explanation. If that is considered to be the ultimate explanation and nothing else beyond is considered, that is when the problem comes up. So the super soul is acting, yes, no doubt. Super soul is acting when you are asking the question, super soul is acting when I am answering the question. But if we want to identify particular talents, this person has singing ability, this person has speaking ability, this person has artistic ability. Now these are all names. We could say everybody has ability for the super soul. But when we want to identify talents and engage people, then we will use some nomenclature. So that nomenclature doesn't deny that ultimately everything is coming from the super soul. So there's musical ability, speaking ability, artistic ability, all comes from Krishna. But if you want to use it for particular purposes, we have to give it particular names. But when the act of giving names is considered to be the complete explanation, then that is where the problem comes up. So silence, if you look at Prabhupada's presentation carefully, sometimes it may appear that Prabhupada is criticizing science and scientists. But Prabhupada is not criticizing science and scientists. There's a well-known conversation of Prabhupada and Prabhupada. We are not against the knowing spirit of scientists. We are against their atheism. If science wants to inquire, how does this happen? How does that happen? That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But if we start thinking that this material explanation is a complete explanation, and there's nothing beyond that, then that is where the problem comes. So instinct is one level of explanation. It is not the complete explanation, but it is one level of explanation within one way of looking at things. So, does it answer your question? Okay. Any other questions? Yes, please. How can we become more mindful so that the favorable impressions to devote for devotion become a nature? In general, we have to start from where we are. That means, say this is the circle of bhakti and this is the circle of what I like. Generally, if we like something, it is very easy to be attentive to it. If I like music, wherever I hear music, I'll become attentive to it. Now, if far away also music is going on, my antenna will go up. What is this music? And immediately you recollect that. So what we do is, we find a circle of the things which we like. We look at the circle of bhakti and see where they do intersect. And where they do intersect, that is where we can be naturally and easily be Krishna conscious. Because say, if somebody likes music, and then there's devotional music, then it's easy for them to be conscious of Krishna through the medium of music. And through that, gradually, as the attraction to Krishna increases. Initially, somebody is conscious of music. But over a period of time, you will start noticing that, okay, there is mundane music and there is spiritual music. And there is a difference between it. When I hear spiritual music, there is a depth to it. It is not there in mundane music. It's just a titillation, but this is some kind of transformation is happening. So initially it will just be attraction to music, but afterward we say it's not just music, it is something more than this music. And what is that something more? That is Krishna. And then our interest in Krishna will also increase. That means in this whole circle, we try to be conscious of Krishna in all bhakti activities. But it's not that easy. At least we start with that which we are naturally attracted to. And from there, we move onwards. And there are certain bhakti activities which we are all meant to do. Or we have the chanting of japa, we have the worship of deities, we have the going to the temple and various things like that we do. But while doing this, we are observant to see which stimuli attract us the most in bhakti. Rupa Goswami in his Ujjwal Neelamani uses the word Uddipan. Uddipan means spiritual stimulus. He says, each of us should look for our Uddipan. So just like everybody has certain sense objects which they are attracted. Like alcoholic, for them as soon as they see a bottle, their imagination goes on overdrive. So all of us have certain sense objects. And somebody says, cricket fan, after this cricket score immediately, the thoughts get triggered. So just as there are certain material objects which trigger our desires, which activate our imagination, similarly all of us can also have spiritual objects that activate our desires, that trigger our imagination. So we find out those objects and we consciously try to keep them accessible. So when we do, so in general, if somebody is told, okay, remember Krishna, okay, what do I do? you know, do I try to visualize Krishna's form? Do I try to recite the words? Do I try to chant the holy names? What do I do? What do you mean by remember Krishna? And we have to find out which Uddipa related to Krishna we can very easily remember. Now, all these are way of remembering Krishna. But somebody, if they find a particular darshan of the deity, they attract. Then keep that accessible. Look at that. You will do pretty much fool. Somebody is more intellectual and analytical, and they keep make some notes with some striking philosophical points. And then look at that, hey, get absorbed with that. So that way, by becoming by keeping our particular deepan, our particular spiritual stimuli, more and more accessible to ourselves, we can become more and more mindful of devotional stimuli. Are there any other questions? Okay. Sorry, come again. Okay, the same work run in different modes gives different results. So how can we become aware of which mode we are working in, which mode we should work in? The modes can sometimes, if we go too much into analysis, they can become very complicated. One simple way of understanding three modes is that we look at it action and contemplation. So in the mode of goodness, there is first contemplation and then action. In the mode of passion, there is first action, then contemplation. First we do, what did I do? So some people speak to express their thoughts. Some people speak to discover their thoughts. They speak, what did I say? We often have a slip of tongue. So, in general, the action, where the action comes before the contemplation, that is mode of passion. When the contemplation first comes first and action comes later, that is mode of goodness. And so Krishna says, Prakash, Sarvadvareshu Deheshmin, Prakash Upajayate, Jnanam Yadatada Vidyat, Viruddham Satmuityate. Prakash means illumination. Illumination refers to contemplation. The inner light is there. Should I do this? Should I not do this? That's contemplation. Whereas in the mode of passion, it's just action. Globha Pravuttirarambha, Karmanamashimansura, Rajasetan Jayante. Yurudheva darshana. And then karma, I have to act. Say, Nike has this store, just do it. You know, don't think, just buy. That's the idea. Just do it. So, and now, in some cases, there is neither action nor contemplation. There is simply delusion. Aprakasho apravrittishya pramado evacha tamasyetani jayante vivrudhe kurnanda. These are three verses, 14, 11, 12 and 13 in the Gita, which talk about three modes. So there is neither action nor contemplation, there is delusion. Hey, this happened, I do this, I do that. If this happened, this will happen. If this happened, this will happen. Oh, this happened, that will be so nice. If that happened, that will be so bad. It's all that is going on in the head, but nothing is happening practically. So that is in the mode of ignorance. So in general, we have to act in life. And if we contemplate and act, that is action in the mode of goodness. The nature of our life is so fast that it is not always possible to be in the mode of goodness. We are running around. It's not always possible to be thoughtful. So we may be in the mode of passion when we are doing certain activities or when we are rushing through life, getting this done, getting that done. But there should be phases in our life in the mode of goodness where we introspect. And then we can do some course correction. So, even if our overall life is in the mode of passion, but if we make sure that our major decisions about life are done in the mode of goodness, or are done when we are in the mode of goodness, then we won't get, we may be in the mode of passion, but we won't be carried away by that mode. Because we will be introspect. So, if we are living in a particular society, we have to live in, to some extent in that, we have to conform with that. But we don't have to entirely conform with it. So if it's a fast-paced life, everybody is living, we also have to live a fast-paced life. But if we have within that fast-paced life certain times where we have time for contemplation, for introspection, we create some breaks in our life, that's when we'll have goodness. So our practice of sadhana bhakti, those are times when we hear, when we chant, when we associate. This is where we come to the mode of goodness. And that's how we can overall bring our life in a proper direction. We don't have to worry too much while doing each action. Am I doing it with goodness or am I doing it with passion? Because that kind of analysis will lead to paralysis. When you have to do something, you have to do it. So somebody does, no, there is no mic for that program. Can you get the mic? And somebody says, I walk very slowly. The class is about to start. Get the mic quickly. Says, no, no, I want to go in goodness. No, the point is that as devotees, we want to serve Krishna. And whatever is required for serving Krishna, if somebody has to run, I'll run for Krishna's service. So it is that a devotee knows that the mode of goodness is most favorable for the service of Krishna. So we try to cultivate the mode of goodness. But we are not attached to the mode of goodness. If sometimes for the service of Krishna, mode of passion is required, we'll use that. Now Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and there he said that Mayapur at the 1970s, Mayapur was a very peaceful, rustic kind of place. And Prabhupada said, for ourselves, we can stay in this village. We can stay in a hut. But we want people to come to Krishna. We need to create some basic level of comfort for them. And that's why we're building these big buildings. And at that time, anytime building projects are quite passionate. You have to bargain, you have to make sure that nobody is cheating, you have to make sure that the deadlines are met. So Prabhupada said this was passion. But this is passion for the purpose of compassion. It is passion. We are running around raising funds, making sure that deadlines are met. But it is so that people can come closer to Krishna. So we focus on serving Krishna. And if we have that attitude of serving Krishna, we will overall gravitate towards goodness. Because we understand that is the best way to serve Krishna. But if certain situations require some other aspect to be, requires us to be more passionate, we will use the mode of passion in Krishna's service. We won't get controlled by the mode of passion. Okay? So, thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Dai Gaur Premanande.